This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For 15 years, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, sponsoring third-party research on a broad range of public management issues facing us today. The framing of an issue often dictates what follows. When it comes to extracting purchasing savings, most procurement executives in either the private or public sector look at the obvious targets, their biggest areas of spend, and their spend with their biggest suppliers. With today's renewed emphasis on strategic sourcing in the private and public sectors alike, the best way to leverage an organization's purchasing power may be to bring a new focus on procurements made at the edge of the supply chain, both in terms of what is being bought and with whom the transactions are made. This is the promise of what has become known as tail spend management. And today, it is clear that for organizations of all sizes and types, tackling the challenge of the long tail of their spending is one of the best ways to reduce cost and streamline operations. And for government today, tail spend holds perhaps even more significant prospects to deliver savings, efficiency, and compliance than in the private sector. What is meant by the concept of tail spend? What is the difference between core and tail spend? How can government executives best address tail spend management? And what are the better ways to manage the long tail of acquisition spending in public sector agencies? We will explore these questions and the IBM Center report, Controlling Federal Spending by Managing the Long Tail of Procurement, with its author, Professor David Wild of Southeastern Louisiana University. Professor Wild provides the first quantitative analysis of tail spend in the federal government. Welcome, David. It's great to have you back on the show.
Good to be here today. Thanks for having me.
David, your report's publication is timely as the federal government continues to seek innovative ways to reduce costs in an era of sequestration and tight budgets. Before we delve into it specifically, I'd like to explore the focus of your report, tailspend. Would you elaborate on what is meant by the concept of tailspend?
Tailspend is a rather new concept, and a lot of times you'll see people do a double take because they don't think they heard you quite correctly. But tailspend is a concept that has migrated from some penetration in the private sector world and now being applied to the public sector world. And in a nutshell, what's meant by tailspend is that it's procurement outlays that are outside of the organization's spend under management. That includes acquisitions made either or both outside of the organization's core supplier group and for goods or services that are beyond the norm.
David, what constitutes tailspend? And what I mean by that is, what are the characteristics of the items and services that fall within the tail of an organization's spend?
Well, tailspend can encompass a number of different categories of items. And when you think of tailspend, classically, you think in terms of the small stuff. You think about fragmented spend, where an organization is spending a lot throughout the organization on things, and it's not being recognized that this is a major purchase area, because let's say in an organization there are 12 different buying units and each are buying their own items, and there's no coordination, and all of a sudden what's being bought amongst those 12 different units adds up to quite a bit. So there is that look at small items adding up, but it's also looking at items that are unusual, things that can be quite large purchases, things that do not come around too often, so that the acquisition staff has any expertise in buying those types of items. You can be dealing with low-price items. You can be dealing with high-price items. You can also be looking at that spending that just really hasn't been addressed in a period of a couple of years, so that it's the organization doesn't have really any insight as to whether its current supplier is giving it a good enough price or not, and so that those items really need to be recompeted in the present environment.
So, David, your report for the IBM Center does a wonderful job of explaining what the concept of tail spend is. Perhaps you can elaborate on the 7 general categories into which tail spend outlay can be classified.
When you break down tail spending, however, you can see that it falls into 7 different categories. The first area of tail spend is what is known as misclassified spending. These are items that are individually purchased and should be consolidated into the organization's existing supply contracts and into its normal competition systems. The second area is fragmented spending. These are items that are repeatedly purchased by various parts of the organization that could be consolidated into larger procurements, and they fall into the organization's core spend based on the aggregate value of the spending. The third area of tail spend is what's known as maverick spending. This is spending that falls outside of the organization's procurement guidelines. And in the public sector, and particularly in the federal area, the larger the organization is and the more geographically dispersed people are within the organization, this is far more likely to occur. And so maverick spending is certainly an important area of tail spend to be looked at in the public sector side of things. The fourth area is unaddressed spending. This is any spend items that have not been addressed by procurement in a reasonable period of time. Looking at, have they been competed actively within the last 2 to 3 years? The fifth area of tail spend is what's known as unusual spending. These are high-value items that are either new procurements or procured only once in a period of a couple of years. They're so rare that the organization's acquisition staff has no expertise in this area of spending. The sixth area of tail spend is what items that are low in price but high frequency. This means that those items have low individual value, but in the aggregate over time, they constitute a significant amount of spend as the spot buys of like items are repeated, both, again, within a smaller unit within the organization and then across the organization or the agency itself. And the final area of tail spend is the area of low price, low volume items. And these are items that are truly at the far end of the tail of spending. And as such, they may need to be looked at, but this is generally an area where they constitute so little value that in looking at them in a tail spend analysis, they're generally going to be left alone because of the low value and low return that would be gained by addressing that area of tail spend.
And David, your report acknowledges that over the past decade or more, the predominant attitude in the area of procurement and supply chain management has been to concentrate on the 20%, the core of the supply base. Why has this been the case, and what are the consequences of such a singular focus?
Well, the long and short of it is that we have concentrated, whether it's in the private sector or in the public sector, we've concentrated our focus on the strategic group of suppliers that are truly key to the organization's ability to carry out its mission. You need to work with the largest suppliers because of their criticality in providing those goods and services. And the thought has been that you can, by working in partnership and in close ties with these key suppliers, that not only do you gain operational benefits in terms of having better working relationships, perhaps better supply terms, perhaps integrating systems to the point where you have the ability to automatically place replenishment orders based on your own inventory levels and so forth. So there's been a lot of reasons to work with that key area of suppliers. Over the past couple of years has come about is this focus that if we're only focused on, say, our top 50 suppliers, our only top 100 suppliers, and then we have this perhaps large, perhaps vast number of other suppliers that we may do one, two, three, a dozen contracts with over a year's time, that there's this other area of supply that we're really not looking at, we're not focusing upon, because we're so focused on that core group of suppliers. And if we're looking at it from a saving standpoint, yes, we're going to work with our strategic suppliers and gain discounts, benefits from working with them, we are going to hit more or less an upper limit in terms of how much savings we're going to experience, whether it's in terms of the purchase price itself or in terms of some of the terms and conditions that we are gaining from working with those strategic suppliers. There's going to be a ceiling on that, and we may be able to get 1-2% savings additionally from working with, say, our top 10 suppliers, our top 25 or top 100 suppliers. But then when we look out there into that, what for many organizations is a vast unknown in terms of, here are suppliers that we may do one or two contracts with, but they end up being for large amounts of money for goods and services. Those suppliers, we may be able to gain substantial order of magnitude savings, 10-20% versus that 1-2% level of savings, perhaps much more if we take a look at the tailspin that is occurring with that group of suppliers.
So this is very important, David, and you point out that with the significant cost involved and the vast potential for cost savings and process improvement, why has tailspin not been so closely managed in most companies? And more importantly, what are the challenges involved in managing tailspin?
Well, the easy answer is why it hasn't been focused upon is that for private sector firms, for public sector agencies, they're all dealing with the same issues. Limited procurement resources. And today, the challenge of quite literally doing more without more. And so if you only have a given amount of human resources, of tech resources, and funding available, you're going to be focused on managing that core supply function. The ability to look beyond that into tailspin, there just hasn't been a lot of ability to, a lot of appetite for among procurement leadership going into the tailspin area. And so, the long and short of it is that why it has not been a focus is just limited resources and appetite for doing so. Now, Michael, you mentioned the challenges involved in managing tailspin. There are a number of these that are out there. The first is poor data visibility. Again, when you're dealing with lesser-known suppliers, when you're dealing with perhaps goods and services that are not bought as frequently or small-dollar items, you're not going to have as good information on dealing with A, those suppliers, or B, with those categories of supply that you do in terms of the core areas for the organization. The second area of challenge is the lack of effective controls. And when you look at that, you're saying that you're not saying it's totally uncontrolled Wild West spending, but you're not looking at that quite as in depth as you do with core areas of spend. The other challenges that are involved are the fact that you have little market coverage in those areas. The fourth is that there are seemingly on the surface anyway, low potential savings from delving into these areas of spend and with the suppliers involved. The final two areas are the lack of interest from stakeholders outside of the acquisition function in the organization, and how, you know, there's a lack of interest in terms of any effort to involve them in a tailspin management concern. The final area is the lack of category expertise amongst the acquisition staff on hand to deal with these areas of spend.
So David, that's an interesting point. What percentage of procurement spending is truly being managed?
Well, that's an interesting question, because if you ask an acquisition executive in the public or in the private sector how much of their spend is being managed, well, the natural answer and the one you want to hear is 100%. You want to say that every dollar that is spent on goods and services is being managed, but that's certainly not the absolute case. And when we're dealing with tailspin, what we found in the private sector is that for private sector organizations, you're dealing with generally about 60 to 70% of the spend that is truly being actively managed. In the public sector, you know, the percentage can vary certainly as the reports show, agency by agency, but on the federal side, when you do the breakdown by the numbers, you're really looking at roughly about 56% of federal spending that is truly in that core area of spend. That would mean that roughly 44% of federal spending falls into tailspin.
Earlier on, David, you gave us a good definition of the concept of tail spend. I'd like to understand a little bit more about its theoretical roots. What about a short history of the concept of long tail spend?
Okay. Well, the simple answer is that tail spend falls along the lines of the well-known 80-20 rule, that basically in almost any situation, 80% of outcomes can be attributed to 20% of causes. And this dates back not just as a rule of thumb, but to the actual work of Pareto and management, quality management, in terms of the ideas of Duran. It was popularized with the idea of the long tail. And if you recall Chris Anderson's Wired article and the book in terms of the long tail, looking at that in the e-commerce area, so much of sales, we focus on best-selling items, we focus on the hot items of the day. But if you take a company like an Amazon, like Netflix in terms of its video library, there's a large number of sales, large number of activity in terms of the long tail that extends beyond the core area of focus. And what marketers have realized for a long time now, dating back to, say, 2005, with the introduction of Chris Anderson's ideas, saying that, you know, rather than going where everyone else goes in terms of the core area, the popular area, the best-selling area, let's focus on the long-tail items, and you can create niche interest and truly create great business opportunities for items that may be small sellers individually but add up quite quickly overall. So the origin of the idea to procurement and the areas of supply chain management really has come about in the last 5 years in terms of private sector companies delving into what became known as tail spend from this idea of the long tail concept.
David, you had mentioned during our conversation the term strategic sourcing. Would you tell us more about strategic sourcing in the federal government? And more importantly, how does it relate to managing tail spend?
Well, the whole push for strategic sourcing in the past couple of years under the Obama administration has been to focus on truly core areas of spend. And where I see tail spend management coming into play and configuring quite nicely with this focus on strategic sourcing is the fact that by focusing on tail spend, you are able to move a significant percentage of spending on goods and services, whether at the agency level or for the federal government as a whole, from this unmanaged area of tail spend, or let's say lightly managed area of tail spend, into core spending and the benefits that are derived from that. What we see in the private sector is significant returns for the acquisition function in terms of, in the private sector world, ROI, return on investment. The more spend you bring under management drives straight to the bottom line profitability of the organization. In the public sector world, by moving spend from tail categories into the core of spending, no, it's not profitability, but it's producing bottom line savings for the taxpayers in terms of reducing acquisition outlays. And so in the environment we're in today, with continual struggles over the budget and so forth, the significance of those savings that are potential from better tail spend management can't be understated.
What does managing the long tail of government spending really mean? We will explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. How can DoD improve its acquisition processes? Check out the latest IBM Center report, 8 Actions to Improve Defense Acquisition. The authors emphasize the urgency of acquisition reform in DoD, given budgetary constraints and security challenges, finding that DoD will need to gain every possible efficiency while resisting the temptation to buy defense on the cheap. This report continues the IBM Center's interest in better understanding and improving the federal government acquisition process. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Government leaders and managers face major challenges today, including fiscal austerity, citizen expectation, the pace of technology and innovation, and a new role for governance. These challenges influence how government executives lead today, but more importantly, how they can be prepared for tomorrow. The IBM Center report, 6 Trends Driving Change in Government, offers a path forward for government executives responding to the ever-increasing complexity and challenges they face today. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness, with Professor David Wild of Southeastern Louisiana University, and author of the IBM Center report, Controlling Federal Spending by Managing the Long Tail of Procurement. So, David, in the previous segment, you outlined for us the concept of tail spend. You do a lot of research in your recent report for the IBM Center that will help federal acquisition executives and policymakers with the first analysis of the size of federal tail spend. Could you elaborate on your research methodology and approach? And what role does analyzing the top 100 contractors benchmark and the federal procurement data system play in your efforts?
Well, what I did was undertake research into the tail spend that is occurring in the federal government. We know it's out there. The question was how to capture numbers that would enable me in the report to provide, as you said, what's the first time looking at projecting the size of federal tailspend overall and then tailspend for the individual cabinet-level agencies, and then take it a step further into what are the potential savings opportunities that are present both at the agency level and at the federal government overall levels in terms of what the returns might be. What I was able to do was to draw upon some very limited studies that had already been carried out on the private sector side in terms of looking at an organization's spend and breaking it down into, first, classifying what is, in fact, core spend versus tail spend. And the easiest way, or let's say the only way really at present to do this, is using the Federal Procurement Data System. And FPDS, in addition to going into their system and looking at some customized reports, they provide a top 100 contractors report each year. And what I was able to do was look at those over the past 5 years, but then in the report, focus on fiscal 2012 federal spending. And the reason I looked back 5 years was to look for patterns of variation. And with the vast majority of federal agencies and even sub-agencies, I was able to find very good consistency in spending activities so that I could look at fiscal 2012 as a focal point in terms of sizing the tailspend both for the agencies and for the federal government as a whole.
As noted in your study, you employ three calculations in projecting tailspend for federal agencies. Would you elaborate on those three calculations?
My approach in the IBM report was to look at the FPDS data and attempt, again, for the first time, to project the size of tailspend for not just the individual agencies involved and for the federal government as a whole, but to also look at the potential savings that could be gained through better tailspend management. I did come up with three different levels of tailspend for each agency. The first is the maximal expected tailspend. This is assuming that the amount of tailspend is literally at the upper limit. It's going to be 100% of the acquisition spending that falls outside of that top 100 core supply group. The second calculation was the reasonably expected tailspend. This is saying that an agency can reasonably be considered to have, as managed spend, an additional 20% of its total spending that is directed beyond that top 100 supplier group. So saying that tailspend basically is 80% of that remainder of spending. The final calculation of tailspend was assuming that the agency had as managed spend at most an additional 50% of its total spending that falls beyond that top 100 supplier group. So that means that the expected tailspend number would be roughly half of the spending that falls outside of that core spending total.
So, David, that's very interesting. How do you go about sizing tailspend for the federal government as a whole, and what are your findings?
Well, for the federal government as a whole, the tailspend was projected to be roughly 44.3% of federal acquisition spending. So if you break down the numbers, in fiscal 2012, the federal acquisition spend was just over $500 billion, $511 billion to be precise. So if you take that tailspend sizing factor, you're looking at the tailspend being as large as $226.7 billion annually. On the other hand, the two other levels would mean that if we look at reasonably expected tailspin for the federal government, that would be $181 billion. Or if we look at tailspin at the minimal level, which truly would be probably the floor for tailspin sizing, tailspin would constitute $113 billion annually for the federal government.
So, David, let's talk about specifically the Department of Defense and sizing the tail of its spend. Would you elaborate on what your findings were?
Okay. We applied the same methodology to the DOD, and for listeners out there, there is much more detail on DOD spending in the report. We broke down the DOD by various agencies within the Defense Department. But for the DOD as a whole, we found that tail spending constituted 35.8% of defense acquisition spending. And based on in fiscal 2012, the DOD spent $356.7 billion on goods and services. So that means that the maximum expected tail spend would be right at $128 billion. And even at the minimal level, tail spend would constitute $64 billion approximately of that $356 billion outlay annually on goods and services within the DOD.
And David, in general, what are the potential savings to be gained through better tailspin management? Are there any other insights or findings you'd like to share with us about your analysis?
Well, there's a number of savings factors that go into this in terms of, yes, we can gain better prices on goods and services if we have an aggressive tailspin management effort. But the main thing is we're gaining better visibility into tailspin management areas, and so our ability to know that we're getting I hate to use the term because it has a specific meaning in the federal world, that best value, but we're gaining the best possible value price on the goods and services that are being acquired for the agency.
What are better ways to manage the long tail of acquisition spending in public sector agencies? We'll explore this question and so much more on our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors returns. In a world inundated with all kinds of information, timely, relevant, and more predictive data can drive better decision-making. Law enforcement agencies are at the forefront in leveraging data and using innovative software to generate predictions that help police prevent crime. What is predictive policing? How can using analytics make us safer? Check out the IBM Center report, Predictive Policing, Preventing Crime with Data and Analytics by Jen Bochner, and find out. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. What do agency leaders need to know about the federal acquisition process? What are some of the key federal procurement trends? And how can agency leaders overcome today's acquisition challenges? Check out the new Center report, A Guide for Agency Leaders on Federal Acquisition by Trevor Brown, and find out. The report offers practical recommendations for improving federal acquisition. Download your free copy of A Guide for Agency Leaders on Federal Acquisition at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness, with Professor David Wild of Southeastern Louisiana University, and author of the IBM Center report, Controlling Federal Spending by Managing the Long Tail of Procurement. So, David, you identified for us in the previous two segments, first the concept of tail spend in procurement, and then did a rigorous quantitative analysis of the tail spend in the federal government. Now, in this section, we talk about some recommendations you offer for managing tail spend. And you also provide a conceptual model for managing tail spend, which I'd like you to elaborate on. Can you tell us the key components of your tail spend management model?
Well, the first step in any effort to address tailspin is just raising awareness about what tailspin is, what it encompasses, and why it is different from the organization's managed spend. And that is key so that there is a grounding in terms of what is being talked about when we say tailspin. And it's also key in terms of getting buy-in from acquisition executives and procurement staffers. And that's very necessary up front in order to get support for the effort, because there's got to be commitment and buy-in from the stakeholders in the acquisition area as to why this is an important matter to address. The second area is to look at spending from the standpoint of spend analysis, and saying that, again, this is not meaning that there's going to be more work dumped on an already overtaxed and undermanned acquisition staff. That tailspin really is to be driven by spend analysis, which is conducted by third-party experts looking at the spending for the agency and looking at where there can be tailspin management efforts put in place to better manage the spend. In terms of the spend analysis, the Defense Acquisition University, in fact, this year put out guidelines for spend analysis, and saying that for any agency, you should look at spend analysis in terms of, you know, who did the buying, who did the spending, who was the requesting agency, how much was spent, and what type of contract award was used, what was purchased, what acquisition method was used, what type of contract vehicle was used, and who received the work. And if you're looking at tail spend specifically in the spend analysis, there's three other areas that I think are very important to address. That is, when was the purchase made? What quarter of the federal fiscal year was it made? From where geographically did the request come? And particularly if you're looking at DOD, state, any operation with global presence, it's particularly important to look at those purchases that are made from far-flung and non-CONUS locations. The third area is just simply, was the procurement made in full compliance with acquisition policies and procedures? And the goal here is not a witch hunt in terms of what was done wrong, or looking back and saying, you know, in the past, you know, these areas fell outside of core spend and should have been addressed. It's looking forward proactively. What kinds of savings, what kinds of operational efficiencies, what types of true competition can we promote going ahead into the future to better manage our tailspin? The third area of the model is simply looking at the spend analysis and engaging in a spend sorting and clarifying exercise. And again, this can be done in conjunction and in cooperation with the third-party experts in terms of spend analysis and in terms of tailspin that are beginning to really have a presence in the private and public sector marketplaces. And it goes beyond just simply saying, you know, looking at spend items for goods and services and saying, okay, this is tailspin, or okay, this is core spending. It really gets into looking at spend in detail to see, you know, where there are opportunities to better manage the seven categories of tailspin that we talked about earlier, and then finding out what the potential returns are to be gained, both from an operational standpoint and from a purchase price saving standpoint. The really final step in the model is spend implementation. And I say final, but it's not a final step that ever ends, because spend implementation means looking at managing tail spend not as a one-time, one-shot endeavor, but thinking about it as an ongoing process. How can we improve our spend management, both in the core and in the tail of our spending, to produce better results in the public sector world for the taxpayer?
Now that you've given us an understanding of your tail spend management model, I'd like to shift to the 7 ways to improve tail spend management that you outline in your report. The first way you reference is tackling maverick spending. Could you tell us a little bit more about that, and what are the action options offered?
Well, for maverick spending, which again is spending that falls outside of the organization's procurement guidelines, maverick spending that can hit the media that provide really negative PR for the agency. There's a world of other maverick spending that goes on that is not, it doesn't draw the media focus, but is in many cases much larger and needs to be addressed. So for procurement leadership, there's really 4 action options in terms of addressing such maverick spending. The first is to determine how, when, and why the spending occurred. The second item is to clearly identify who was behind the particular acquisitions and what their motivations were. The third item is to ascertain why the purchases fell outside of procurement guidelines and determine if there are any changes that need to be made to those guidelines or to the regulations involved in order to support the agency's overall mission. And the fourth action option is to look at that maverick spending and to determine if it can be routed into existing contracts for the agency.
David, the second way you offer to improve tail spend management is tackling unaddressed spending. What is that again, and what are the action options associated with tackling this issue?
Okay. For the listeners, we'll remind them that unaddressed spending is any spend items that have not been addressed by procurement in a reasonable period of time, and that would generally be considered to be 2 to 3 years. The action options for looking at unaddressed spending would be to determine why the good or service in question hasn't been competed recently, and then to establish whether or not the item is, in fact, the most current and or appropriate for the situation. This happens constantly in the IT world, looking at buying perhaps laptops, perhaps monitors, perhaps television units that are not just last year's model, but perhaps 2 or 3 years old models. The third action option is to consider if there are substitutes available for the item that would be available through normal channels. So, that dovetails with the fourth item, to examine if the spend on those goods and services can be routed into existing supply contracts. The final action option is one that we see repeated throughout much of the recommendations, is to consider if reverse auctioning would be appropriate for the goods or services involved, specifically to make sure that you're competing the good or service in question to make sure that for the government they're getting the best possible market price for that good or service at the time of the acquisition.
The third way is something called fragmented spending. What is it, and what are the action options available?
Okay. Fragmented spending, again, to remind the listeners, is spending that are on like items that are being repeatedly purchased by various parts of the organization. And these goods or service buys could be consolidated into procurements that would, if consolidated, fall into the organization's core spend based on the aggregate value of those buys. The action options are to first target fragmentation and investigate why this fragmentation has occurred historically. The second action item is to consolidate those buys across users, locations, and units within the agency as much as possible to make them larger, more coordinated buys. The third action item is to work toward greater intra and inter-agency consolidation of spend in targeted items to leverage the agency's buying power and to buy more strategically. The fourth action item is to examine whether that spend can be routed into existing supply contracts and whether those contracts need to be recompeted due to what would be heightened use volumes because that formerly fragmented spend was being routed into a larger volume of buys for those goods and services involved. The final action item, again, is to consider whether or not reverse auctioning should be used in order to make sure that you're getting the best market price for the good or service in question.
So, David, the fourth way to improve tailspend management is spending on low-price, high-frequency items. And could you tell us a little bit more about this, and what are the action options associated with it?
Okay. With low-price, high-frequency items, these are items, be it a good or a service, that have low individual value, but when you add them up in the aggregate over time, they represent a significant amount of spend as those spot buys of like items are being repeated. And we're dealing with that both within individual units in an agency and across the organization as a whole. The action options for acquisition staff and leadership in this case are to consider if with these low price, high frequency items, if there are like substitutes available that would be available through normal procurement channels. The second action item would be to consolidate buys across users, locations, and units within the agency on those items. The third action option would be to work toward greater intra and interagency consolidation of spend in those targeted items in order to leverage the agency's buying power and to buy more strategically. The fourth action option is to examine if that spend can in fact be routed into existing supply contracts. And finally, again, should reverse auctioning be utilized here to ensure that on those low price, high frequency items, either purchased individually as they have been historically as the spend analysis uncovers, or in an aggregated form as buys are consolidated, are you getting the best market price for those goods or services?
And David, the fifth way to improve tailspend management involves something called misclassified spending. What is that, and what are the action options available to federal executives?
Okay. Misclassified spending is simply spend on items, be it a good or service, that have been purchased individually that should be consolidated into existing supply contracts and competition systems. The classic example are just mistakes in wording. Say we're buying chips, and someone reads that as buying potato chips when you're really buying computer chips. That's an extremely simple example, but does happen in organizations, private and public sector alike. The action options for misclassified spending is first to, most importantly, reclassify the spend into the proper category. Make sure that the spend is labeled and understood correctly both by the requesting buyer and by the acquisition staff. Make sure there's not miscommunication going on. The second action item is to examine if that spend can be routed into existing supply contracts. The third item would be to determine if that spend does need to be recompeted through normal processes because, again, the spending has risen in value because you've suddenly determined that you have a larger volume in buying those particular goods or services that are uncovered in misclassified spending. finally, whether you should consider reverse auctioning here because, again, these buys that have been occurring, whether individually and that whether that continues or whether the aggregated buys, whether or not you're getting the best possible price for the goods or services in question.
David, you offer two more ways to improve tailspin management. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about those areas and what are the action options available?
Okay. The sixth area of spending that should be addressed is unusual spending. These are high-value items that are either new procurements for either the requesting agency or the acquisition staff, or they're items that are procured only once or so rarely that the organization's acquisition staff really has no expertise in that area. The action options are to consider if there are substitutes, perhaps better known substitutes available for the item that would be available through normal channels, so you that translate that unusual spend into more usual spend categories. The second action option is to consider whether you should use reverse auctioning in this case, specifically because if there is that lack of market knowledge, awareness for an unusual item, then it would be best to perhaps test what the market is for the competing potential vendors to provide the good or service in question at the best market price. The final area of tailspin involves spending on what are simply low price, low volume items. These are items at the very far end of the tail of spending that have very little value to look at in terms of tailspin analysis efforts due to the nature of their low price. And there are action options involved with these. First, you can categorize the items that need not have further consideration so as to not consume any additional time in the agency's tailspin management efforts. You can also determine if, even though they're low price and perhaps even low volume items, determine if those items can in any way be consolidated within the agency or across agencies to see if they would be worth looking at. You could also look at if there are substitutes available for the item that would be available through normal channels and to look at some consolidation, if that's possible, determine if the spend can be routed into one or more of your existing supply contracts. And finally, with these low-price, low-volume items, consider if reverse auctioning might be appropriate so that you at least, even if they're not going to be a focus, they can be more routinely competed to make sure that you're not overspending on such items.
And David, there are some common themes that emerge from your efforts to better manage tailspend in the federal government. What are those themes? And more importantly, what does the future hold and what are some of the next steps?
Well, a common theme is that this is an area that acquisition executives should want to address. It can be done in a way bringing in third-party experts who will conduct the spend analysis and then look at, in conjunction with acquisition leaders and acquisition staffers, look at what falls into the organization's tailspin, how big it is, and then look at those specific seven categories of tailspin and develop strategies for addressing those. The chief benefit of this is that in this time when we have continuing budgetary challenges, by producing bottom line purchase price savings, the acquisition function can produce some quite important results and fairly quickly. And this will heighten the importance and the standing of of the acquisition function within the agency overall. The second real motivation to do this is that it can be done without overburdening the existing